This is Amy Kitchener with Helen Brown, and today is July the 2nd, 1993, and we're going to start now. Helen, can you tell me when and where you were born?
Oh, I see. Okay. I was born in Manila, which is the capital of the Philippines. And I was born in May, 1915.
And who were your parents?
Well, my mother she's deceased now, a Filipina from Ilocos Norte, Lawag, in the northern Philippines. And my father he's deceased too, from the U.S. and of Dutch and English parentage.
And how did he, what was he in the Philippines for? Did he meet your mother there?
Yes, he did meet my mother there because he went to the Philippines in 1901 when he graduated from college in Missouri. And at that time, the United States was in the beginning of its colonization of the islands. And one of their strategies of and goals in their colonization was to teach or enable public education on a universal basis for all of the people. And the United States realized that English had to be the medium of instruction because the Philippines at that time were composed of many different regions, each region had its own distinct culture and their own language. And it is said that at the time that there were actually about 89 main languages, so that Filipino people really could not communicate with each other. So their strategy, the U.S. strategy, was to, in order that they could communicate with the Filipinos as well as the Filipinos could communicate among themselves if they had a national language. And so that's why English was chosen as the language of instruction. And it was mandated all over the islands that public education be conducted in English. It was not true of the private schools, however. They could teach whatever they wanted, but they eventually also taught in both Spanish and English.
So your father came as a teacher?
As a teacher.
Mm-hmm. And where did he teach? What classes did he teach?
Well, I don't think there was any formal classification in terms of as we know it today, because primarily it was to get the people together to be taught. So I think it was very much an all grade as we know it today, consisting from children into adults.
Were there many Americans in the Philippines?
Oh, there at that time, not too many. Although there were many previous Western attempts at colonization in the islands, because that was the time of the end of the Industrial Revolution, and a lot of the Western nations, especially European, were establishing their areas of influence and empowerment in different parts of Asia, and in China and Indochina, And so the United States at that time wanted to establish their sphere in Asia. And at the time of the, as I mentioned, my dad went there in 1901. Just a few years previous to that, in 1898, there was an opportunity for the United States to establish a place in Asia. And that came about because Admiral Dewey, with the U.S. fleet, happened to be in China, in Hong Kong, cruising around, I guess. And so they were having a kind of a revolution against Spain in the Philippines, and they had practically ousted the Spanish government, especially, and had actually established their own republic in the Philippines, and that was in 1898, which was the really the first republic in Asia. And however, there was a division of power between the two prominent leaders, one of whom was assassinated by the other, and the one that survived had to leave until the crisis in leadership was over. And this was General Aguinaldo. And he was in Hong Kong at the time and met with Dewey. And Dewey got orders from McKinley, who was our president at the time, to go ahead and work with Aguinaldo, who requested the American Navy's help to oust final enclave or group of Spaniards that were still left in the islands in Manila, in what was called the Walled City. They were still there, and as long as they were still there, we would not be, the Philippines would not be completely free from Spain, although they had practically, had their own government already and had actually conquered or ousted the Spaniards after 350 years in the islands. So Aguinaldo and Dewey made a bargain that the U.S. fleet would go to the Philippines and oust that last contingent of Spaniards. And so that was known in our history books as the Battle of Manila Bay. And they were successful in overcoming the Spaniards. I'm going back to your question about how my dad happened to go there. Am I going too long-winded or what? Well, okay. So the agreement with Aguinaldo was, with the U.S., was that they would help them, to oust the Spaniards, but they did not have any agreement at all that the United States would stay and colonize the Philippines. So what the United States did was to go into agreement with Spain that Spain and the U.S., without any representation from the Philippines, would go to Paris, which they did, and there was the Treaty of Paris in 1898, where who was ousted already from the Philippines, sold the Philippines to the U.S., I think, for $20 million or something. And that was the rationale by which the U.S. remained in the Philippines after 1898. Of course, the Filipinos were very upset about this, to say the least. And so there existed an American-Filipino war. And the Filipinos fought against the Americans, that they couldn't last with the superior army and navy of the U.S. They were already exhausted by the fight with Spain, and the leadership was in crisis. So they tried to capture Aguinaldo, but it took them quite a while to do so. But eventually they did, and that was the final blow, and that was the start of the colonization. So their strategy was to pacify the people, and that's why they decided on universal education. And so they advertised for American teachers, men and women, to go to the Philippines to teach. And from what I understand, there were many teachers who did take advantage of that. They were afforded transportation. They were paid by the U.S. And they did a good job, in my opinion. And the people were happy. The Americans encouraged the Filipinos that as soon as they learned their English and basics in education, which really was amounted to a sixth grade education, those Filipinos were placed in teaching positions throughout the islands to gradually take the place of the American teachers. So that's how my dad was one of those who took advantage.
And how did your parents meet?
Oh, well, my dad from Manila, all the American teachers were assigned to positions all over the islands. There were 7,000 islands, you know, on the islands, so you see that they were really placed in lots of different places. But my dad was assigned to the north, which was where my mother lived. And she was in school, and she was a high school student, apparently. And so that's where they met. And they were married in 1910, I guess, about 9 years since my dad was there.
Was that common or uncommon, or how was that viewed at the time, intermarriage?
Well, it was very well accepted. However, my mother's dad happened to be one of those revolutionaries that fought against the Americans. So there was a little problem there, you know. And the other problem was, but my dad, from stories that I hear, you know, that have been handed down, you know how all those little tidbits come down, that my dad was very persistent and catered to the older folks, and he did. The courtship didn't result in a marriage right away. The other problem was that my mother was the third daughter in the family, and to get married first, that was a no-no, you know, in the culture.
You're supposed to wait
Wait your turn. So that caused a little problem, but I guess that was settled. But from what I understand, everything went on pretty good. We were seven children out of that marriage, and my dad gradually rose in terms of management of the school system. So if my oldest brother and sister were born where my mother was born in Lawag, I was the first one to be born in Manila because my dad was transferred.
So you're number three?
Because my dad was transferred to to Manila because he became one of the directors of the Bureau of Education. And so he remained there for practically his lifetime. And it was only in 1933 when he was retired that he decided that the rest of the children would go to the with the family would go to the States, settle there, so the children could, you know, finish their education in colleges here.
So education in the US. Was very much a motivating force.
Oh yes, it was very high. Well, not only in the family, in the culture of the Philippines, education is very highly valued. In fact, that's why Filipinos came to the United States, because they felt, you know, that this is where they could get the kind of education that would enable them to succeed, you know, in life, and actually go back to the Philippines and have a good job and a good life over there. And the American teachers actually encouraged Filipinos to, those that they felt had the potential, to come to the United States to better their education, their English, and so forth. And of course, it turned to be an altogether different kind of an experience for the early Filipinos, mm-hmm. who were not the ones that that were necessarily motivated, like I've described, by the teachers and others because of education to come to the U.S. It was the American industry, the agricultural industries and sugar primarily, that motivated the United States to recruit the Filipinos to come in the first to Hawaii to work in the fields, sugar cane and other products, and later on to the West Coast. So they were the ones that followed the Chinese and the Japanese as they were ousted.
They shut down immigration.
Right.
And
so opened it up to the Filipinos. And since the United States was colonizing the Philippines, they were classified as nationals so that they could come in large numbers.
In what years were
those? That essentially most of the 1920s.
Do you remember? Did people you know?
Oh yes, I had some friends, some of my mother's country friends, and some cousins who came at the time, and did experience the discrimination that you read about now.
What do you remember them talking about? I'm just going to turn this over a little. Do you remember what they talked about why they were coming?
Well, they came because the experience of the United States, the Americans in the United States, and it began really with the soldiers before the teachers came. The soldiers were not punishing to the Filipino people after the Filipino-American War. There were some horrible stories about the Filipino-American War. In fact, there's a story about, we talk about My Lai in Vietnam, you know. Well, there's documentation, you'll find them now in the writings of Filipinos and Filipino students about the My Lai kind of experience in the islands, you know, where villages were shot by Americans at mass graves. They talk about that being the first My Lai in Asia. It was in the Philippines, actually. Well, let me see. Talk about experiences. Well, while the Americans were there in those days, everything that was the best was something America from America.
And can you remember an example?
Well, you work hard so that you can go to America, you know, and then you can have a good education, and then you can have a good job, and then you can come back, you know, and be well established in the islands. Well, not only that, the products, you know, that were coming into the Philippines because of the relationship, apples, oranges, fruit, you know, from the islands, they were the best, you know, all of the islands. And even me, when I was growing up, we kids used to sit down and we'd talk, oh, when we go to the States, boy, we can get an orange out of the, or from the orange tree. And we were neglecting how, you know, that I saw later in life, you know, for me. I said, my gosh, we were worshiping those oranges and those apples. They were Christmas presents and everything. And here were these delicious tropical fruits that when I was older, I was just drooling, you know, that I wish that I had. And in the Philippines, I thought that was nothing, you know. So we were always dreaming things American, you know. So even to this day, you know. That's why it's very hard to get moved from this agricultural economy to the industrial economy, even today, because of this thing that what America has is the best. They'd rather buy American shoes, the American dress, sheets. Whenever Filipinos go back to the islands, you know, for a visit, one of the main things they bring are American products, sheets and stuff. So there's not that motivation to establish their own industry. But it's beginning to change now from what I hear.
So when you were growing up, was it always established that you would be going to the United States at some point in time?
Oh, yes, especially with our family. Now, you've got to realize, too, that there was a very, I don't like to say very rich, although there is a segment that's very rich, but the more comfortable life in the Philippines compared to the life of most of the people, because poverty is a big problem. So I always say that that my life was a very comfortable one in the islands. So I grew up in that kind of a context. Everything that I experienced in the islands from when I was born until I was 16, or even after 16, when several years after I'd been here in the States, was the thing that that was Western, the adoption of Western value systems. Except for the very strong sense of family, which is a cultural value in the Philippines, taking respect for the elderly, taking care of your own, and the value, you know, of education. My upbringing was in the islands, was very Western. So that when I first came to the States, that was a problem for me, because was my orientation. Yet it wasn't that way in my relationships with other Americans here. By that I mean they would look at me. Now remember, this was 16 years old, 17, or very sensitive. And there weren't a lot of Filipinos in the cities where we bought a house and were growing up. The Filipinos at that time were out in the fields, the bulk of them, you know, laborers and things. And there weren't the kind of middle class, upper class Filipinos that we see here today. With this Western kind of emphasis growing up in the Philippines and coming here, I thought everything would be just the same, you know. But it wasn't. I was at first, you know, relating to peers that my same age. We'd have parties, and sometimes we'd have slumber parties, and I'd remember we would be talking, sharing experiences, and where were you born, you know? And they'd say Illinois, or they'd say California, or whatever. And I'd say I was from the Philippines, and where? Well, you know, that would start the frowns, you know. Where was that? You know, where was that? And I said, well, it's out there near China. was it near Hawaii? You know, kind of thing. No, a little bit further than that. Oh, is that right? So they'd look at me and they'd say, did you go to school there? And I said, oh, yes, I went to school like you went over here. Did you live in the house? Well, that kind of thing, you know. And also, well, you know, they'd say, Helen, when they'd ask, you know, where are you from? You know, you seem to be like us, but there's something different about you, you know. And so I began to say, hey, you know, that isn't the right thing to say to get along here. So I'd fabricate. I'd say I was from Hawaii, you know, or Czechoslovakia, or whatever I thought of saying, you know.
Did you have sort of
that? And that would be accepted. That would be accepted. They wouldn't say, oh, where's that? You know, they wouldn't say that, you uh-huh. know.
But, I mean, if you said you were from Czechoslovakia, would they say, oh, well, do you speak the language? Or did they ever say it was just accepted?
I guess it's because in their schooling at that time, they would know those things in geography or history. They wouldn't know too much about Asia, let alone about the Philippines, you know. And so...
And what about your brothers and sisters? Did all seven siblings go to the United States?
My oldest sister remained in the Philippines because when we left as a family, because she married we call ourselves mestizos, half. So she married another mestizo whose father was also a Tomasite and whose mother was a Filipino, but they were from a different part of the islands. They met in the university, and so she married, and so she remained in the islands. And she remained through the World War II, and when it was very difficult for them. And then my older brother was already here because he, being older, he was sent to school here. He went to the university in Ohio.
Was it a state school or a private school?
No, it was a state uh-huh. university, yeah, college.
Uh-huh.
University of Ohio, I think it was called.
Uh-huh.
And so he remained here, married here, and then I came over. Well, I did come over before 1933, but that was in, 27, I think. When my dad chose me and my older sister to go with him to come here to the States, because he was thinking of planning already for retirement, and so he wanted to come ahead of time and travel in California and see, you know, what might be possible for a place to stay.
Why California?
When he left Illinois, he was young, and he had relatives also in California. So we came over, and that was a time that was pretty bad here in the U.S. We didn't feel it as with our group in the islands. There was the beginning of the recession, the and also a lot of the discrimination against the Filipinos, the Watsonville riot and everything. And there were a lot of Filipinos in Washington where we first...
Did you come by boat?
Yeah. Yeah, there weren't any airplanes at that time. It took us a month when we traveled in that time. We traveled on the Empress liners, and they docked in Vancouver, and so we bought a car and started driving down. And in Washington, in Seattle, my dad liked it a lot over there. And he visited the University of Washington, and he thought, gee, that would be nice for the kids, you know. So he decided to buy this house that was kind of close to the... But when they learned, in questioning his, well, the usual blanks to fill out, and he's from the Philippines, his wife's from the Philippines, they wouldn't let him buy the house because real estate laws were against any people of color at that time. You couldn't buy property, you couldn't... Sometimes you couldn't go to school, couldn't get married. So, and then he'd be reading all these things. So he was really upset. He says, I'm not going to come back to the U.S. Let's go back home. So we went back.
So you didn't come back down to California at that time. You just went to Washington and went back.
Right. It was a very short stay. So that's what happened. He retired from the school system, and he got a job with one of the tire companies. I think it was Goodyear. So he worked there for a while, and then he really retired, and then brought the family to California.
So, and that was in 1933.
That was in 1933.
So that's 6 years later.
And we were at that time. Things hadn't changed. He was able to buy a house. In Arcadia, and I was able to go to school. There were no questions about being Filipino, except these little nuances, you know, that I've already.
In those 6 years.
Well, apparently, I guess with my dad being around and things, and it was different. So I really didn't think about those things at that time, you know. So my memory's kind of hazy.
So where did you go to school?
Well, my dad found this ranch, a 1-acre ranch. It was about where Rosemead is today, in that area. And the nearest college or junior college, because I'd already finished high school, was in Pasadena. So I remember taking the bus. There was a bus that came around, picked up kids, and drove them to Pasadena to go to school. I remember that. And then when I finished there, then I enrolled at UCLA for my third and fourth year.
So did you live on campus at UCLA? Or did you commute to the family?
I lived at home for the first maybe 3 or 4 months because I was very lonely. So I came home every day. That was a long trip. I found a ride from somebody who lived close by, and then we didn't have the freeways either. But then gradually, you know, I got to have friends, and so Dad said it would be better for me to stay there. So I lived in a dormitory over there at UCLA.
What was that like and, for you?
Oh, it was okay. I didn't make friends easily. I was kind of lonely and lonesome, as I recall. And because the kids were different, you know. When was that? 33? Yeah. They were different from what I was used to. They were very friendly with the guys, you know. I wasn't still very protected, and a lot of their conversation, as I remember, was that and partying and stuff. But I liked to study. But too, I remember being missing out on a social life over there. So I really compensated by really studying. I love to study and I love to read.
What were your favorite subjects?
My favorite subjects, I think mostly education, I guess, history, stuff like that. Philosophy. I didn't like math, and I couldn't sing a tune. And I remember my dad getting a music tutor because I had to pass this test because my major was education. He wanted me to be a teacher, like him, you know. And so one of the requirements was that you had to pass this music test.
Because it was assumed that you would be able to teach
music, right.
Every subject.
So I had to get, my dad got me this tutor, and I had to practice, you know, doing scales and stuff like that. And then the test, they didn't give you the test in a room by yourself. You had to sing in front of the whole class. I still remember that. Well, anyway, it turned out that I was a very good student.
What happened when you gave the performance?
I passed it, but my heart was pounding, and I felt, so anyway, I was embarrassed, really. As I recall, but anyhow, and Corrine Seeds was a very famous educator coming from the Kilpatrick and those progressive educators at that time, teaching progressive education based on units of experience, you know. Like I took the third grade when I was with experience, and that was a study of transportation and boats and stuff like that. So that was, you know, really very exciting for me, because then you had to go out. I remember going out to San Pedro and studying the boats and everything, and I had a boyfriend that was in the Merchant Marine working on the freighters, and I told him to get a lot of pictures and things, so we had to make a unit of study. And anyhow, it's very much like, but at the time, that kind of education was considered very socialistic, very communistic kind of it.
Why?
Yeah, it really was.
Why?
Because it was so different from the traditional ways of teaching. It was people-oriented. It wasn't bureaucratic, you know. And everything was related to experience, like it is today. You know, so that was about 50, what?
Well, 1940?
50 years ago, you know, kind of thing. But that was very neat for me, because I saw meaning in that, you know. And so I was disappointed when I got my first job in teaching that we weren't allowed to teach that way.
When did you graduate then?
I graduated and I got my degree in 37, and then jobs were kind of scarce at that time, so I was subbing and I had some time. So I went back to UCLA for my master's. Well, it took me about 2 years, and then I got my master's in 39. So school was very pleasant for me. College was. Not so much the social aspect of college, but the learning, and I exceeded in that. I became quite an honor student. And belonged to the women's honorary. I became friendly with quite a few of the professors and learned a lot from them. I became what they called a reader for the professor in education, where I had to read the papers of students, you know. And they used to get mad at me because I was very strict about, you know, what the thing. The teacher, Doctor, I still remember Dr. Siegel. She's passed away already, but I remember she gave me an outline of certain scores to give, and so students, of course, they wouldn't agree. Some of them, so I always had a lot of practice in explaining things, you know, that kind of thing. But anyway, what was it that we started all this? What was the question about?
So you were doing your master's and... And then when you got your first teaching job?
Later on during my graduate work, it was... Socially, it was much better. I guess I matured more. I guess my social life growing in the Philippines and being very protective and that kind of thing had, you know, was very immature compared to what was happening here in terms of social life of kids.
So how were you very protected in the Philippines? Was that traditionally for girls?
Or? Yeah, right. You couldn't date, for example, until you were 18. And even at 18, if you were being dated or went out, you had to have somebody go along with you. That kind of thing. And there's a lot of preaching, and, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was institutionalized. I mean, that's the way you were expected to be. You know, you could cheat, you know, but then you'd feel very guilty about it. But when I came over here, you know, that, you know, it was different. They were so much more advanced socially. But by the time I'd been here long enough and the graduate school, things were much better. And the graduate students were more interested in study, and we had these interesting workshops and things like that, so... So that was good. And then of course, I started to meet Bill.
Who, oh, when was that?
It was towards the end of... See, part of my graduate work, I talked about work being scarce, but I substituted for about a semester, and after that I was able to get a position. So I was working at the time, and that's about the time that I met Bill. I didn't know him at UCLA. I just met him afterwards because he happened to be a friend of the boyfriend of a of another Filipina that I was living with. See, I never went back to live at home once I got used to being at school and things and having my car and everything. So anyhow, so let's see, and I was doing very well in teaching.
Teaching job was, that your first job that you got in teaching?
Well, like I said, I was substituting at first. And then we used to live in about 105th Street and Hoover. That's where, later on, I'm going ahead a little bit. You're talking about the first job because about that time too, I got married, you know, in 41. And so Bill and I were living in 105th and Hoover.
The early
years of, well, it's well, that that's what we call the South Central today.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was a very white neighborhood at that time. And today it's considered part of Watts. It's, well, you know 105th Street, and you know where Hoover is, okay, when you extend that. That's the area where we were growing up. I mean, my kids were growing up, and where I was living when I was first teaching.
I was covering that.
Okay.
So my first job was not too far from there. I think it was 96th Street School. There were mostly whites and some, a few blacks and some Hispanics. And I stayed there for quite a while. And then,
what grade were you teaching?
Well, most of my assignments were, I always chose the lower grades. I felt more comfortable with the younger kids. And so all of my, I didn't teach very long. I only taught about 8 years. And I liked teaching, but I didn't like the school environment, you know, or the school culture. I didn't like the idea that